I'm David Marcus, host of Drinks with the Deal, and today our guest is Laura Tarano, an M&A partner at Paul Weiss. Laura, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, David. This is awesome.
So we're going to talk about several things on today's podcast. First, your background, how you got into the law and developed a real love for M&A, your teaching an M&A course at NYU, what you've worked on or some of the things you've worked on in the last year, and then finally, what you do to decompress. So with that, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to the practice of law.
Perfect. So I grew up in Fort Myers, Florida, which is geographically and in terms of just different life, very far away from a New York City law firm. And when I went to the University of Miami, I knew I wanted to go to law school, but I really didn't know jobs like the one I have and firms like the one I work at even exist. And at Miami, I studied Spanish, I studied international studies, I studied political science, and I really thought law school was a place that you either went to right before launching a political career, something I have no interest in now, or before being a prosecutor or a defense attorney. And so I'm at Miami and get admitted to NYU, and I decide, you know, I need a year break. I need a little bit of time to do something different. And so I applied for a program that allowed me to be an elementary school teacher in Spain. And so I actually, for 1 year, taught elementary school kids that didn't speak English, science and English, which was a really awesome experience for a lot of reasons. And also, it sounds very different from what I do today, but actually really taught me a lot of lessons that I use in my practice today. And then, you know, from Spain, went to NYU and then ended up meeting the man that would become my husband. And the very first night I met him, he said, you know, I understand you're really interested in international human rights, but have you ever thought about working at a law firm? You never know, you might just like it.
Sounds like a very NYU law conversation.
I mean, it was on West 3rd Street. It's as NYU law as possible. And so I followed that advice and spent a summer at a law firm and thought, wow, this is actually super interesting. I'm going to go back. I'm going to be an associate and I'm going to do it as long as I love it. And I'm still doing it because I still super love what I get to do every day.
So talk a little bit about that year between college and law school. And I think you may have done some other study abroad. What you learned in those experiences that you apply professionally, even though, as you said, you wouldn't necessarily draw that connection.
Yeah. So I think about it in a couple ways. I think as a teacher, and especially with young kids in the classroom, one of the things you have to be aware of is how are people absorbing the information you're giving them? And everyone's a different learner, right? And everyone is coming from class, you know, they're coming into class with just a different set of skills. And so how do you convey that information? How do you make people understand it? How do you get your message across? And I think that's hugely important. My clients are super sophisticated and super smart and super awesome at their jobs, but they each have a different way that they learn information, and being able to convey information, convey it in a way that's actionable so they can make huge decisions is really the art of what we do day in and day out. The other thing I would say, because I studied abroad, you're right, I worked in Chile, I worked in Colombia, and every single time it was uncomfortable, right? It's uncomfortable to go to a country you've never lived in before. It's uncomfortable to start a new job, especially one where the language you use isn't your native language to work in that job. And what I decided was, one, I would become supremely adaptable. So I would become comfortable being uncomfortable. And then the second piece is I decided I would try to be a chameleon of sorts. So I wanted to speak Spanish like a native speaker. So I wanted to see, how does the person in the grocery store line in front of me, how do they ask for change? Not just asking for change like they taught me in Spanish class at school, but really, how do the people around you interact? What slang do they use? When do they use it? And I think that's very much like starting a new job at a law firm, in the sense that when I think about a successful first-year associate, part of it is just adapting to the new environment you're in, seeing with your deal teams, how does the partner respond to emails? When do they respond to emails? How quickly do they respond to emails? and the tone and all of those things, and just deciding, okay, that's someone that's going to be my mentor. That's someone that's a model for me. Let me model that behavior. I don't need someone to tell me what to do. I can just absorb it and replicate it. And then that can be, you know, a way to fit in, a way to be really successful myself.
So talk about that process when you were a young and mid-level associate and the deals that were really critical for you, both in terms of career development and in terms of really falling in love with the practice.
Yes, I think two big deals stand out for me. The first is when I was a first year associate, very early on in the year, I got staffed on a deal where it was a Japanese client doing their very first acquisition in the United States. And there was a lot of handholding involved because it was the first time they had ever done it. And every market, every jurisdiction has different market norms. So we had to spend a bunch of time explaining to them, well, this is normal or this isn't normal. This is what we can ask for. This is how you can be competitive. And it was just a tremendous experience because even though I was the one writing, this is how it's done, I didn't know that was how it was done until I figured it out and talked to the partner and packaged that information for the client. And so one, I just got to learn a ton, but two, because I was working day in and day out for the client, I realized, wow, if you are trustworthy, and trustworthy means a client can see that you will find out the answer, you're on it, you're responsive, you care, they will trust you even as a very, very junior lawyer. And when you realize that, it's very powerful because it's empowering, right? Like you get to think, if I do a great job, people will look at me, people will recognize me, they'll think of me as their advisor. I really got to do a great job so I can have this experience again. I can replicate this with other clients. So that was huge. And then fast forward, I think the other deal that stands out for me is as a very young fourth year associate, the senior associates in the group were busy. And so a senior partner took a chance on me. He thought, you know what? She works really hard. I'm going to put her on this big public deal, even though she's never been on a public deal before. And I'm going to have her be the senior associate because I'll take the extra time to mentor her, to teach her. And that was Baker Hughes getting a hostel offer from Halliburton. And we were in Houston. I was in the board meeting. I was actually, for parts of it, we would respond to the other side's offer. So, you know, you had the CEOs going back and forth. I would draft the text messages that would be sent back and forth. I thought, this is the coolest thing of all time, right? Like this is huge stakes, M&A, advising a board. This shapes an industry. It was just absolutely tremendous. And that's where I thought, this is the best thing ever. I can't believe I get to do this for a living.
It sounds like, I mean, of course, you're describing it now, but it sounds like you felt pretty comfortable in that role, even as a mid-level associate.
It's funny that you could think I felt comfortable because the whole time I thought, I have no idea what I'm doing. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to approach it what I think of as with paranoia and insecurity. So I'm going to embrace the fact I am terrified by this and channel that to mean I am going to be as prepared as I possibly can be. I'm going to ask advice from other associates, advice from other counsel about how to approach different problems. I'm going to read as much as I can. I'm going to just super, super prepare to overcome the lack of experience. And that's where you would get the confidence. That's where I got the confidence to be in the room and do exactly what I was doing.
You must have done a pretty good job of not showing the client those feelings, because I'm sure you realized you can't show a client that side of what's going on. No,
you have to keep that on the inside. I mean, not to jump to what I like to do for fun, but I'm a horseback rider. And one of the jokes with horses is it is never your turn to show you're scared, because horses replicate and exaggerate your feelings. So if you're the one that looks scared or feels scared, you'll just scare the horse even more. And so being calm, approaching something with calmness and trying to really logically figure it out, I think, one, it's a huge part of my hobby, but that also is a really important skill to be able to help clients on what is transformational M&A for them.
Talk a little bit about your move to Paul Weiss as a senior associate, and then what it's like to become a partner and managing that transformation as well.
Well, the opportunity to join Paul Weiss was just, I mean, it was truly like getting a seat on a rocket ship that was already in orbit and you just knew was going to go higher and higher. I mean, it was just tremendous. And I look at it in terms of three things. I think first, for me personally, it was the opportunity to be mentored and to learn from Scott Barchet, the head of our corporate department, who really is the very best in the world at what I do in public company M&A and shareholder activism. And when he called me and when we first started talking about the opportunity for me to come to Paul Weiss, I really felt like a high school basketball player that was getting a call from LeBron, right? It was just, wow, like this, the idea that I could get to shoot hoops with this person, this makes no sense. It's so awesome and amazing.
Have you worked across from him on a deal or gotten to know him?
You know, it's one of those things where you think the world is large, but when you actually boil down the industry, it's quite small. So I think I first got on his radar because bankers had seen me, even though I was a senior associate, acting like a partner on my transactions and had really seen me being able to lead the client to what was a good negotiated outcome in order to achieve their goals. And I think that stuck out in their minds. And that's what gave me the reputation in the industry, even as a young lawyer, where I was on his radar.
And then you mentioned kind of two other factors in that.
Yeah. I mean, the second factor was Paul Weiss, I think, just has this perfect mix of practices. And I think that's two different things. One is having this incredibly strong public company practice that I'm part of in M&A. And the second is the really strong private equity practice that we're just making stronger and stronger by the day. And the third is really having this incredible mix between corporate and litigation. The fact that when I'm working on a deal and we get into a hairy issue, which in every M&A deal, there's a problem or something that you need to solve, that I can call the best litigators in the world and ask their view on the issue, just makes the advice I can give clients so much better. And so joining a firm that, one, I get to work with the best person in the space, get to work with Scott. Two, I get to work at a firm that's so balanced. And then third is what Scott said to me the very first time we met and we were talking about the opportunity. He said, Laura, I am going to build the very best undisputed corporate practice in the world, and it is going to be the most diverse. And that is something he promised me then, and he lives every day. And when I reflect back on it, you know, looking at this year, I helped Estee Lauder buy Tom Ford. I did the Duck Creek deal, which was one of the biggest take private deals of the year. I helped Carrier buy Viessmann, which is, you know, more than a 10 billion euro deal. I helped Merck buy Prometheus, more than a $10 billion deal. I helped IBM buy a company, which is more than a $5 billion deal. I did the $20 billion deal last year with Smurfit Westrock last week. In addition to Jay-Z Bacardi, all of those deals had majority diverse lawyers on them, right? And that is a live by it thing of you can actually make incredible opportunities for diverse lawyers if you're trying. And that, I just love it. I mean, all those factors combined make this just a complete dream job for me.
Talk about the transition to partner, which is a very different, maybe almost a completely different job than being a senior associate. I mean, was that another moment that was terrifying and you did a pretty good job of hiding it from everybody?
I think you said it right there. It was terrifying and I did a pretty good job of hiding it. When I had just shown up at Paul Weiss, I got a call that week from Baker Hughes and they hired me for a deal. And I thought, wow, you know, this is a client who, even though I'm a young partner, even though I'm at a new firm, it's like a housewarming gift. This is the very best thing that could happen because I'm helping my friends. I feel at home working with them and working for them. And I also was that sort of terrified of, wow, I am the partner on this matter for a client I care deeply about. How can I hit it out of the park? And there were two things, I think. One of my mentors at the firm came to me and said, you know, when you make partner, just remember it's a lot of what you're already doing, right? Sit there and just do what you were doing. And so I sat there and I did what I would do before, which is dive into the details, know every aspect of the agreement, see around corners, and try to focus on what's similar about the role, not what's different. And then also it was that paranoia and insecurity. I thought, you know, going into that first negotiation as a partner, there's no one that's going to chime in with a saving point, right? I need to be able to save myself and how I am positioning these issues and winning points. And I did that through really, really, really understanding what the client cared about, because that's what we should be negotiating for always anyways. And being able to anticipate, okay, what's the other side going to say when I make this point? How will I make a counterpoint? How do I want to say this way? And over preparation, I think, again, helped make up for lack of experience.
Did you realize even when you were in college on study abroad programs or in Madrid, and then, you know, during your career, you actually enjoy being uncomfortable? I mean, is there a piece of you that kind of likes feeling a little stressed?
I think that, I mean, maybe that's something that all M&A lawyers have, or all high achieving people have, right? I mean, I think that hard to say enjoy, because I don't think that I enjoy it, but I keep seeking it out. So there must be something to that. But, you know, it's also when I think of it from especially an associate perspective or a law student perspective, what you want to be at is a place where if you picture swimming in the ocean, your head is above water, right? You're treading water. You're not drowning. You don't want to be in sort of a life vest where you have all this equipment where you have no challenges, right? But you need to be where you're treading water comfortably, but uncomfortably at the same time, because that's when you're learning, right? That's you're pushing out of your comfort zone, but you still have the support you need. And that's what we really try to do at Paul Weiss, which is you need to have this mix of push experiences where you don't feel ready, but you actually are ready, but then also have that support and mentorship and training so that you're set up for success and you feel confident being uncomfortable.
Talk about your teaching at NYU. I think this is the first year you've taught there. Why you decided to do that and how that experience has been for you so far.
It's a dream come true. I love teaching. I love the idea of being able to, just from a substance perspective, talk to a class, teach M&A. And then I think it's also, it's wrapped up in diversity in the sense that I thought, you know what? I don't look like, I don't talk like, I'm not what someone would have said is a traditional M&A lawyer, right? And so isn't that valuable in itself of me leading a class? And even if it results in one student thinking, you know what, maybe I should go to big law, or one student thinking, even though people tell me being in this group is more predictable, M&A is super interesting. I'm going to try out doing something I'm super interested in it, that it's worthwhile. And that's what I decided was going to be a good use. And it's super fun. I absolutely love my class. It's a lot of fun to do on Mondays.
As you went about preparing for the class, which I think you started to do even in the spring, are there issues or solutions to issues that have popped into your head as you've thought about structuring the course, maybe reread some of the classic Delaware cases on M&A?
Yeah. So, I mean, what I was trying to do, and I really did, I think it was when we were at Tulane together that I was telling you how nervous I was about preparing for it. I decided that I wanted to have a mix of practice. So in terms of how do we day in and day out advise clients, and then also hard cases. And the theory was in my mind, I wanted to make sure that students remembered that we are grounded in law, right? You should know, you should care about what the Delaware courts are saying. You shouldn't just be thinking we're writing contracts in a vacuum. You should have that awareness, because when you're giving really critical advice to a board in terms of how to navigate an M&A process, that matters. But there's a lot of practice mixed in. And then the other piece that's mixed in is, especially in the back half of the semester, each week I'm going to have a partner from a different practice area come and talk about what they do and how that impacts M&A. And I think that's huge, because a lot of M&A, right, it's a team sport. You don't just do a deal where you're narrowly focused on the M&A issues. The issues people care about, exec comp, IP, litigation that can come from the deal, tax. And so having those different partners who are also leaders in their field come and talk, I think is just going to be hugely helpful to students.
Obviously, business development is a huge part of the job for any M&A partner. And it's something that traditionally has been seen as, you know, as you were saying, with regard to the stereotype of the M&A lawyer, something that was done by the older white man.
Right.
Talk about your approach to business development and client development?
Yeah. So it dawned on me as a young associate, because everyone used to be very skittish about a partner who was the partner for Comcast. It was like, wow, that's the Comcast partner. And I realized one day someone was talking that actually that person was the Comcast partner, because before that, he was the associate that used to do Comcast work, and another person was the Comcast partner. And before that, there was a different person that was the Comcast partner. And I thought, wow, it's not like this person just went out to drinks with the right person or played golf with the right person, and they became the main lawyer for a big client. What they did was really excellent work, and that work was recognized externally by the client and internally by the firm. And as a result, they got this tremendous responsibility. And, you know, it's actually the same when you think about Barche. Like, his first deal for IBM was as an associate working for IBM. And it's not easy to have that position, right? Because the only way you keep a client is by doing really excellent work day in and day out. But it means that work is where more work can come from, right? Just like a banker noticed that I was the one leading a deal and coming to solutions and problem solving, a client can notice you did that for them, and they'll ask you to do it again. And they'll probably tell their friend who's complaining about their other lawyer, hey, you should use Laura Toronto. And so I decided to, and this was actually pretty purposeful, not be stressed out about things that people would say a woman wouldn't be good at. I wasn't going to get stressed out that what happens if I don't get invited to as many drinks, or what happens about the fact I don't play golf. I would just do really excellent work, and that would really pay off. And I would network from that work. So, you know, when I work on a deal and a banker is on that deal, I try to stay close to that person because I hope to do the next deal with them. And I think that that has a real snowballing effect, or at least I hope it does throughout the course of my career.
You mentioned a number of deals you've worked on over the last year. Is there any moment or a couple of moments that stick out in that amount of work?
So one was just how absolutely awesome the year has been, because it's just been so, you know, just completely across industries, right? Which is such a blessing and such a cool experience. And obviously advising Jay-Z is like one of the coolest things of all time. I feel like it is hard for me not to just shout from the rooftops how awesome that was. But just as awesome for me was helping Carrier buy Viessmann. And that was really for two reasons, I think. One is that it's such a transformational deal for Carrier, and they really wanted it. And being able to help a client do something they really want is incredibly gratifying. The other is because their head of M&A legal is someone that I worked with for years as an associate. And so having a client that's a friend and helping that person achieve a goal for their company is just so super cool. It was just a fun experience. I mean, there's two funny stories. One was Carrier Viessmann, we were negotiating in Germany for weeks and weeks and weeks. And we are where we think, okay, we're about 10 days from signing. And we actually get to signing, and so close, we're not going to be able to come back to the United States anymore. And there's one last weekend where everyone could go back to the United States. And so the Carrier team decided we're going to go back for 3 days, and we will be back in Germany, back in Frankfurt on Monday morning. And so said, okay, if you guys are going home, I'll go home too. I'll see you Monday morning. And I'm on the flight from Frankfurt to Newark. It's a Thursday. And I get an email from Merck, and they say, this weekend, we're going to buy Prometheus. And I thought, well, this is actually really convenient, because for the next 3 days, my client who I've been on around the clock in Germany with is actually taking a little break. And I guess I'll do a $10 billion plus deal during that 3 days. And so we got it done, and it was so super fun. And the other story I'll tell you is, fast forward, I've now signed Merck Prometheus. I'm back in Germany. We've just signed Carrier Viessmann. We're so super happy. I'm at the airport with the friend I mentioned, who's our head of M&A legal and just an awesome lawyer and an awesome person. And we decided, you know what, all we've done for the last several weeks is work. Let's shop at the airport until our flight takes off. And so we're at the Gucci store in the airport, and we're just, you know, window shopping, looking around. And the store clerk comes over and she says, oh, you have such wonderful tastes. Have you bought anything interesting while you were in Germany? And we laughed and we said, Viessmann. Talk about how funny when you think about people expect women to be doing in a store and what they might be doing. it was pretty funny.
And then finally, you mentioned the horse riding earlier. Tell us a little bit about that hobby, how you got into it and how you're involved in it now.
Yeah. So I first started riding when I was 6 years old. So I've done it for as long as I have any memory. And it is truly a North Star for me. I absolutely love riding. I actually took 10 years off from the sport from when I graduated high school until I was a third year associate at my former firm. And I took the time off because I really needed to concentrate on school and this, that, and the other. And it actually, as a young associate, my husband turned to me and said, you know, you always talk about how riding was important to you and how that originally was why you tried so hard in school, which was to have a good job to ride horses, and you're not riding horses. Like, that makes no sense. And so he said, I found a barn that's close to New York City and I've gotten you a gift certificate. You should go. And, you know, at first as a young associate, it would be something I would try to do for an hour on a Saturday. And then really the interest kind of grew from there. And you know, the thing I will say, in addition to it being important to have a hobby or have a true interest outside of work, because I do think that keeps you balanced and motivated, it's also important, I think, to be surrounded by people who understand the demands of the job. And so my trainer, Peter Patch, like the thing about him in Brookwood where I ride is he knows I work all of the time. He knows work is my number one priority. And so I get lessons super early in the morning before most clients are awake, and he makes that happen. And he also knows, like, wait, if a client calls right before we need to go in the ring to compete, sometimes that means I just hand the reins over to him and say, sorry, the horse show is not going to work out today. And he gets it. He knows the priority. And so having people like that in your life are just so tremendous to making it all to come together.
Laura, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun.
For Drinks with a Deal, I'm David Marcus.